Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for all things Kings of War. Join your hosts Rob Fanoff and Mark Zielinski as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Rob Fanoff, and tonight we have Thomas Foss from Skull and Crown on the show. Thomas, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing swell. Thanks, Robert.
Let's jump in and talk a little bit about Skull and Crown. Who is Skull and Crown?
That would pretty much be me. I'm a kind of a one-man company, although I do have some offshoots with different people that help me, either with editing or printing or casting or even my model sculpting work. What currently I'm working with Drew Day Williams for my 28mm metal miniatures. But other than that, I do all of the laser cutting, the design work for the models, the rules writing, etc.
So where did the inspiration for the company come from?
Well, Skull and Crown, the company itself, it's not my first company. I've actually been partners in other companies previous. Before that, I was in Flagship Games, and we had our probably best known for our Pirates Miniature Battles on the High Seas games. So that was in the 80s and 90s, where I did all the resin cast ships. And it was just good tabletop pirate battles. And I see there was actually a game at being run at KublaCon with 20 players. It was pretty phenomenal. 28 millimeter ships in a big battle. It was really cool. And then previous to that, I was in a company that my college friends and I started up called 7th Street Games, because that's where they live near the college. And we did our biggest piece there was a tabletop game, three-dimensional tabletop game called Mecha! Exclamation point. So it was a very anime-style mecha game. So I've come from a long line of small startup games, and Skull and Crown started about 6 years ago when I was actually playing on the floor with my, at that time, four-year-old son, and we had just bought this cool Nerf cannon from the Disney store and set up a bunch of wooden blocks to do cannonade, and we were building a fort. And I have some old wooden soldiers that I got at Gettysburg way back when I was a kid, just a few figures, and I had them, and I was getting clobbered by my son. I'm like, I need reinforcements. So I was looking around to get more wooden soldiers, and I couldn't find them anywhere except for like in antique stores and whatnot. So what I ended up doing is figuring out how to make them, and I had a Kickstarter, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to make my own. So my first line for Skull and Crown was the Wooden Wars. So it's just so I designed a game where you play on the floor. Because that's where you should be playing games with wooden soldiers. And it's basically you have a baton to move your troops, and then you're actually tossing rubber balls at the soldiers. And the biggest rule of the game is the ball has to bounce at least once in order to be in play, right? And that way you're not hucking the ball at, you know, great speeds. And it also gives it that historical inaccuracy of cannonballs at the time. So you're knocking guys over. It's pretty visual and obvious if you hit somebody or not. And what's really interesting about that is you start to realizing that, you know, as a war gamer for many years, and I played lots of Napoleonic games with their charts and stuff, you start realizing when you extrapolate down to just guys and projectiles, why they use the formations they did at the time. Line makes a lot of sense, because if you're in column, we call it the domino formation when playing the game, because you just get clobbered. So that was my first Kickstarter. Got a laser cutter, and then I've just been building and designing games from there. So I've got, my Wooden Wars game. I've got Galleys, Guns, and Glory, which is Renaissance period galley game. So like Battle of Lepanto and stuff, and I do the ship models for that. And I'm just coming out with my new jousting game, which I ran at KublaCon this weekend, called Breaking Lances. So it's a quick and fun jousting game. So that's what I do with my wooden stuff. But I, on the side, I'm always been playing miniature war games and stuff, and using 28mm, 10mm. I love War Master. And I've really been getting into Kings of War lately, which is kind of an old hammer versus War Master kind of sensibilities, or even in the modern black powder thing where Priestley and the boys have kind of extrapolated out their favorite parts of War Master, interestingly enough, and played with it. So I thought, well, what army do I want to play with? And I've got my dwarf army, and I'm rebasing that, and I bought a really cool halfling army from Westphalia Miniatures,
Westphalia Miniatures. Kawi makes some awesome, awesome stuff.
Kawi and I are really good pals. We've hung out together, and we talk weekly. So I'm building those, but I wanted my own army. I'm like, well, so going back to the roots of the very first war game I played, ran by my now godfather, Alan Lucian. It was a game of figures that he had at the time. This was probably in the early 80s, and it was Romans versus undead, because those are the armies that he had, right? And we were playing like old, and this is going on the Wayback Machine, a set of rules called WRG, the War Games Research Group, 7th edition rules. But I just fell in love. He had the old minifigs, undead, from the Valley of the Four Winds series. Probably the first undead armies, figures ever made on the market for miniatures. And honestly, you know, when you look at them now, they look like they were made with a soldering iron. They were not the best, but they captured this certain, movement and elegance to them. And they were like my first love, my first date. Right. And they always stuck in my heart. And, so growing up, I went to art school, and I'm always drawing skeletons. I love that German woodcut style of Durer and Holbein and the Triumph of Death of Bruegel. And I just I started tooling around. I've always wanted to basically remake that series of undead in that kind of German Lanzknecht style, but I just don't have the sculpting chops. I'm more of a fabricator. So last year I ran into Drew Day Williams, who's a really well-known sculptor. He's done stuff for GW and gobs of other people as well as himself. And he and I started talking, and I bought a couple of trolls off of him because he had some for sale. And he's also in love with this time period and thing, and he's always wanted to do this project. So we've been working on it. He's been sculpting it. I've been designing it. Well, and, you know, Hans Holbein's been designing it too, because I'm just using stuff up there. When you have all those great period concepts for art, it makes it easy. So we started building it up and going from there. And I made some master molds and cast some pieces. We've done some tuning. And it was interesting because as soon as I started kind of showing them off to the clubs and things, everybody's first question was, when's the Kickstarter? And I wasn't really even planning on doing a Kickstarter. I was just going to kind of create the line as best I could and then, you know, a few figures at a time and put them up on the store. And then when those started selling, buy more, you know, get more cast and molded. But even Kawe's like, when's your Kickstarter? So I did a Kickstarter, and it's actually up live now, my Triumph of Death Kickstarter. And it was funded in the first 70 minutes, which just blew me away. So for all of you out there in Kickstarter land, thank you. So cool. And so I'm, you know, the idea of the Kickstarter is really to kind of pay off the rest of this line, but mostly to start funding for the sculpts to complete an army, so we can all have cool undead armies.
Well, and it's fantastic because you know, something Dan King and a couple other people and I have been talking about. It's definitely old school, you know, old hammer, as Kawi would say.
Yeah, man, I'm an old hammer kind of guy.
And they're fantastic. So why metal? That'd be the question I have. Do you want to go? You're going all in on the old hammer theme.
Why metal? Because skeletons are fiddly.
Good point. Good point.
You know, and they don't cast well in resin. I was worried that they would just be too much breakage in resin. If I was doing it in resin, I'd be tempted to try and do it myself, and I don't have that kind of time. And on the West Coast here, and maybe Robert, you've got some contacts, but in Conway and I've been talking about this. Like in the UK, there are some fantastic resin casters, right? You know, Conway's line with his halflings were done in resin, but here on the West Coast, I don't know anybody really that does it. Everybody else that's going into that kind of stuff have done plastic, like Reaper, you know, and they've invested lots of money into their plastic machines. So I decided to just go old school metal because that's what I knew. And I wanted to make sure that the skeletons had the strength for the size of the legs and stuff to be able to get them to look thin and spindly the way you want, but still have the strength for, you know, for taking wear and tear of what War Games figures need.
When you compare them to, say, the GW 6th edition Empire Spearmen,
mm-hmm.
they almost look like a perfect match, right? Like, that would be the undead version of this.
Oh, yeah, and that was by design, right? I mean, if you look back at a lot of Blanche's drawings for you know, Warhammer and Jess Goodwin stuff or Allie stuff, they're relying just as heavily as I am on the period Renaissance pieces for their designs, right? So I'm getting a really good tie in there. But it was important, Robert, that the scale matched up to figures that I already have, like my GW figures, and that other players have too, right? That was one of the updating from like the old minifigs line, not only actually giving them more detail and different designs. There's a couple pieces that are just straight off homages, but I also wanted to make them true 28 millimeter scale as opposed to the original old tiny 25s.
Where does the line, I mean, obviously this Kickstarter is successful. What's the next step? What's next? Because, you know, as Kawi's been on a couple times, I always ask him, when's the next Kickstarter?
I don't know when the next Kickstarter is, but it'll be sooner rather than not. I've already got Drew sculpting things. So the idea for the next range to add on to the figures is to looking at the Renaissance and like what things work well, right? There's four units that we're considering, and we'll do the first two and then keep adding on. Skeleton crossbow, right? Have you ever seen one? I think maybe like in the old Grenadier miniatures, they might be like a skeleton with a crossbow. You see some with bows, right? Even GW did those, although they were rare to get that extra bow arm in the plastic kits. But I'm doing a skeleton with crossbows, so it'd be a nice ranged troop in that kind of Italian Renaissance period. I did a couple of sketches of skeletons with arquebuses and muskets, but it just kind of seems silly that they'd be able to, you know, with the matchstick and blowing on it and stuff. Which, of course, is silly in its own right because you have an animated skeleton.
But come on, we got to keep our fantastical beings real, right?
Yeah, but the crossbows look good, right? You know, and I was actually, it was one of the things I was talking with David Emery of Saxon Dog. I don't know if you know his sculpts. Really great medieval, late medieval kind of 100 Years' War period, French and English, because I'm using those guys too. So, and he's got some really good crossbowmen. So I was talking to him about like, you know, where did you get research for poses? Where were you looking at things? So I've been looking at those and, you know, and of course looking at my Osprey books and my Angus McBrides and other period stuff. So I've got, three sketches for different crossbows, the skeletons crossbows, and they look pretty righteous. The next unit is pike, right? You know, what's a Renaissance army without pike units? And, now, one of the things that I did with the current miniatures, I have the one of the poses is a skeleton marching open-handed, and it's meant to be like with the big javelin darts from the Peter Bruegel painting, and they have the giant the full-size coffin lid shields that you can use, right? It's that death marching inexorably. But I made that guy open-handed because when I got my samples back, I got a couple of like miscasts, and so I cut the hand out. And I drilled it out, and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna make this guy a pikeman. And I made another guy a swordsman, and just to see how they worked. And it worked so well that we decided that to resculpt the figure before the Kickstarter and have it remastered, because the open-handed model just offered so much more variety for everybody. Yeah, not just me, but it was primarily me. I'll be selfish about this. Like, oh man, I can do so many more things with this one figure with an open hand. But of course, everybody can. So he was kind of the starting of the pike unit idea. But now Drew's already in sculpting three different pike poses, so we can get those kind of traditional undead Lanzknecht pike units. So those are the first to be crossbow and pike. Next will be Zweihanders. You have your two-handed sword guys. And then we're looking how to do cavalry and what we want to do with the cavalry.
Are you thinking like heavy cavalry? Or are you thinking light skirmishers? Or
so if you look at the Bruegel painting, on the far left corner of the Peter Bruegel painting, there is cavalry coming down. And they're just naked guys on really scrawny horses. And they're actually either using dart javelin spears or they're carrying scythes. So they're going to come down and just reap everybody, right? So make great like revenant cavalry or reaper cavalry or something. I think we'll probably do like a couple of pieces with bits of armor here and there, but really it's more like light cavalry, right? These guys are just jumping in on you. The heavy cavalry part is kind of hard to do if there's no body underneath it to support it, right? So the first sketches are just we want to just show off like that undead skin looking thing with the horses, similar to the if you've had a chance to look at my models, the commander that I have, right? Death on a pale horse. And he's got the scythe based on the Albrecht Dürer drawing, which is just a small pencil drawing he did like back in 1515. But it has so much character to it. So something like that with the scrawny horse, and he's just riding it and. Probably with the lance and shield or the javelin. I don't know. We're working on some ideas. People out there in podcast land, I'm open for ideas. And if you have links to really cool period, you know, woodcuts or drawings of undead horses, man, send them to me. That's because I'm not just sculpting these for myself. I kind of,
well, you start with really that, right? That's the beginning. Yeah, but that's not.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also the feedback from everybody else, right? Like, what do you guys want?
Yeah, I mean, you got your Kickstarter's going insane already, right? It's I'm just looking at it here.
Yep.
Yeah, you're already ten times funded, right? I mean, that's with
10 times funded. We've unlocked some really awesome stretch goal pieces. Like, you know, there's the what I call the reinforcements guy, which is the skeleton just carrying a big basket full of skulls. And then we've got the priest, which he's carrying like a lantern in his right hand and ringing a bell on the other one. Which is based on straight off of a Holbein woodcut, and then a piece that's the reliquary that I designed like years ago, which is just a skeleton carrying this giant fish with a crown on it. So it's a golden reliquary, like the Fisher King reliquary or something. And it's just burdened by it. So it's really nice vignette pieces to go into your army. Plus a whole suite of flags too. So you'll have all these Lansknecht flags. Yeah.
12 days to go. So what else you got in store? You got more stretch goals?
So I do. So the current stretch goal up, which is just I think at 12 grand, is some more variation into the troops, right? You know, so when everybody's buying, because I'm basically selling the armies and the troops, except for the you can get the collector set too. It's kind of a one of everything kind of thing. But for like playing, and I was talking to guys at KublaCon, they're like, yeah, I bought that. I'm going to use it for Frostgrave, or, you know, another guy's using it for his Mordheim troops. But for the units, the next stretch goal is to add more variety. And I actually did this in one of my earlier stretch goals too, like when I got like 50 people. So variations on the same figure. So that marching open-handed skeleton I was talking about earlier, we're doing two variations. One where he's wearing a breastplate and taces, so he's got some armor on. And then another variation where he's got one of those cool like Lansknecht flat caps on, and I think he's missing a jaw, and his body's a little bit different. So so when you unlock that, when you get those units, they'll just be a mix of more flavors of troops, right? Because everybody wants that. You don't necessarily want the same guy all the time. You want a little bit of mix and match. So that's that. And then the next stretch goal coming up, and this is I'm actually putting up the artwork for it hopefully tonight, will be a new standard bearer done in that Lansknecht style. Because I've already given you flags, so now you'll be able to get a new standard bearer too.
And talk to me. Obviously, you're playing some Kings of War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you taking into account the undead army, and are you thinking about how these models are going to be able to be played in Kings of War?
Yeah, I was actually talking to a fellow named Sean who's running the Kings of War tournament this weekend. I'm talking to him a little bit about it as well. I've only actually got to play like two Kings of War games so far, so I'm still just getting into it. But I'm enjoying what I'm doing. Looking at the models, like the halberdiers and stuff, they work great as revenants. You know, and then you get the hordes of rank and file troops. You can get the bow troops. So that's what the javelineers are great for. But you could also, if you wanted to, you could just flip this and make it, just call it a human army, right?
Like, yeah, you could just be Kingdoms of Men. Yeah, for sure.
They're late Lansknechts, right? You know, and just think of, you know, story wise. I mean, that's kind of how I'm thinking about running it in the next tournament as I start playing, not necessarily as undead, but like those mercenaries that are going to do their contract. Yeah, they got wiped out in the last battle, but they're going to fill their contract. That's where they've come up from the dead to just do that, right? So just using them as humans. And that gives you a lot more options and flavors. Then you can add in their pike blocks,
absolutely,
and things like that.
I think you need to make this army. You need to make this happen. Get it painted up. That sounds like a great idea.
I am. Well, as you can see on the Kickstarter, I have some painted units already for sale. But I still have a few figures left here from the Mastercast. And I've got a unit being painted right now. And I'm doing a... I'm also going to be putting up on my Skull and Crown blog a couple of painting guides. So like a step-by-step of how I'm using the different colors to paint them up. Because right now, it's actually pretty easy. I'm using the P3 paints, which I love. And I'm using like three colors. It's like the Bloodcracker Brown for the base. The Beast Hide, I kind of use that to bring up like a little bit of a highlight. And then I throw some Agrax Earthshade on it and get a really good wash on it. And then I'll go back in and touch up some highlights with what is this? I have to read the color. It's kind of a it's a the Menhoff White highlight.
Privateer Press.
Yep.
P3 paint line.
Yep. Boom. Yep. Good. Yeah. I love Privateer Press. Right. Exactly. I love those colors. And that's all it really is. And they come out stunning. You get that really good, really good look, and they pop out. Drew Williams has done such a great job with the details on it that when you just give it just a couple, like one color and a highlight, and then throw the wash in, that wash does 90% of the job for you, that and the sculpt, and then just going in and touching up some highlights. It's really fun.
You know, how are you going about having these things cast up? Obviously, you're not doing the metal casting yourself.
Nope. I am Steve Phillips of Firing Line Miniatures, who's been my caster for well over 20 years. He used to do all my cannons and ship wheels and stuff for my pirate ships back in the pirates days. He's doing the casting for me.
Fantastic.
So, yep, he's in Arizona. So this is all made in the USA. Drew's up in San Francisco sculpting for me. I'm down here in San Jose. For them's on the East Coast, it's in Northern California, Bay Area, and Silicon Valley, and Steve's in Arizona. So, yep, I send him the masters, and he molds them. The new process he's using now, because a lot of times for them's out there in podcast land, I know I've been on a Kickstarter, or been even on the end of this where typical mold making for casting metal miniatures is done with a vulcanized rubber process, which is a heated rubber where they melt all the layers together and it turns it into one solid piece. Well, in that process, they have to apply pressure and heat, lots of it. And there have been times when the master sculpts, which have been made out of, the two-part epoxy putty or the milliput or the green stuff or even, super sculpy, sometimes it gets crushed, melted, or destroyed, and you lose the master. And it's just dreadful. It's heartbreaking, right, all the way around. To nobody's fault, it just happens sometimes. But my mold maker Steve has branched out and is using RTV rubber molds for the masters, which is a cold rubber that works just off a chemical process like you'd make for making resin casting. And not only does that preserve the scale, but it also preserves the masters, and you get great detail off of those. So we don't have that worry of losing a model.
Kawi says, say hello to Thomas for me.
Yo, Kawi.
One of the things that's going to be interesting is, are you going to do your own packaging and shipping? Are you handling all that distribution stuff yourself?
I'm an old hand at it. I mean, I've got my web store up already, my Skull and Crown web store. So I'm shipping packages out once or twice a week, depending on how orders are coming in. And so I'll be doing all that. For the Kickstarter, don't expect any fancy packaging. You're just going to get the bags and the troops and everything and the bases, right? So one of the things I'm providing with the Kickstarter and aimed towards Kings of War are the troop and regiment movement trays. And so I've designed ones, and they have a deckled edge on them, which actually link together. So when you're moving troop movements and stuff, you can click your kind of units together and move them around. So they work really well, but they'll just be simple, simple packaging. But I'm looking into. I was actually at KublaCon this weekend, talking to my pals at Zombiesmith Miniatures and getting some numbers on like where they get their clamshell packaging. So we'll probably end up doing something like that, right? Because that's just the best and cleanest way to do for the units.
You still got 12 days to go. Any idea where you think this is going to end up?
I'm blown away and super excited about how far it's come so far. I would love to see us hit a couple more stretch goals just so everybody else has more variety and excitement into the models themselves. But I don't know. Kawi told me he thinks it's going to hit 20,000.
That would be my guess. 25 might not be out of that. Because, you're getting ready to hit the where it really ramps up, right? Near that end.
Yeah.
Where it really, because, you haven't even, you start out, usually they start out hot, they kind of cool off, maybe a couple spikes in the middle, but then right near the end, it just goes crazy.
Yep, I'm super excited about that. And I'm trying to do everything I can to advertise and push for that. Things like, the painting guides that I'm working on. I'm also working on another, just experimenting now, so I don't know if the how-to, but painting them up to make them look like White Walkers. So more instead of that kind of brownish skin that you'd get from the German woodcut style, but more that kind of bluish, whitish look. So I'm trying to get like an easy and quick steps for that too. So far, it's looking really eerie. I'm liking how the model's coming out.
So looking at your catalog, what's your favorite product?
You mean out of all my Wooden War stuff?
Everything. What's your favorite? Anything you make or have ever made?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I'm currently going to exclude my Kings of War. My Triumph of Death stuff, because that's my that's my new baby, right? I would have to say that's a really good question. I think it's going to be my Wooden Wars Napoleonics. I love the shape of them. I love the feel of them. I love to paint them. I love the color of them. And when you see them out on the battlefield, they're just so much fun. Second to that, I would have to say back when we were doing Mecha, I designed and sculpted and cast a series of Aztec mechs. Because we did this thing called Spirit Warrior Empire, which was very much a niche of a genre.
Sounds like a great war game.
it was really fun. And the Aztec, growing up in California, Mexican art and culture is just part of your blood. And being able to design mechs with that kind of Aztec feel was a real treat.
So obviously this is not your first rodeo in terms of production Kickstarters. What'd you learn from the first Kickstarter that you have applied to this one?
Oh, tons of stuff. I did the other one. It was quite a few years ago. So Kickstarter itself has learned a lot and have provided tools for us. But things I've learned was really be prepared before you launch the Kickstarter. I actually waited an extra month, and I'm going to throw another shout out to Kawe because I showed him my Kickstarter. He's like, dude, you're not ready. You need to clean this up and do this and do this. So he was really helpful in supporting me and getting my Kickstarter going because he's the real trained professional. But just knowing that I wanted to be ready for everything, having the stretch goals, the painted stuff, painted and ready to go, right? So it's already packaged and ready to go. For the people that have bought them, having samples so I could actually show you guys not just the greens, but taking the time and the investment to actually get the models in my hand and know that they're viable. And that they are really as cool as we had hoped, so that I could show it to you guys in the painted versions of them. That was important. That was something that I couldn't necessarily do with my first Wooden Wars one because I didn't have a laser cutter at the time, although I did prototype some stuff. Other things like like now I know that the Kickstarter is doing great. So I've already started getting ahead of schedule. So I've already talked to my caster and started getting the production molds made. So, so once the Kickstarter stops, I'll already have stuff in packages. And because I want to make sure that I can get this stuff turned over to all the backers as soon as possible. Right. Cause I know, I'm always jonesing and waiting like, when's that going to come? When's it going to come? So I've been doing that. And so just making sure that I have, as many things in all my ducks in a row as possible is the best thing. I didn't necessarily have that going on my first Kickstarter, because I was just learning kind of as I was going, especially with stretch goals and stuff. Like I had, I was hitting the stretch goals on my last one every day almost. I was hitting one. So I was furiously sketching up the new design. And we're here, I've kind of planned out the line and know where we're going to go with it. The other thing is just communication with people. I love talking with my backers. They've got great ideas. They've got great questions. So making sure that that I'm open and approachable to them. That's another thing I've learned. And really excited about.
Well, there's no point in making a product that nobody wants.
Yeah, but just like in the chat windows, in the comment section and stuff, right? People have great questions and great feedback, and I love hearing that. It's part of the community.
Future-wise, you're going to want to try to flush out, pun intended, the range. You got any ideas for other armies down the road?
Ooh, so people have been bandying other ideas to me, like some of the customers. Going back to that Aztec theme, thinking about undead Aztecs, or that kind of Dios de los Muertos skeleton style that I like as well, right? So that's something that I've been playing around with. Other than that, I'm still working with my Wooden War stuff. I'm actually, with my wooden ship models, I'm currently designing, and they kind of got put on the back burner because of the Kickstarter and because I'm still trying to figure out how to make them work. I'm doing an Anglo-Dutch Wars ships. In flats. So I don't know if you're familiar with the Anglo-Dutch Wars period. It's that kind of 1690s, 1700 period. It's like the Vasa. If people usually know about the ship, the Vasa. It's that period when ships of the line look like cakes. They're just full of decoration and artwork and beauty and sculpture and gold leaf. So the models themselves, the ships themselves are just absolutely gorgeous. But the tactics of the time of sailing ships wasn't like we know with like Nelson and his ships of the line. It actually only towards the end of that period came in. It was more like, hey, there's Rob's ship. Let's go beat him up. And it would just be this big scrum of ships, right? The English versus the Dutch. So that's a line that I'm working on right now, and hope to, that'll be probably the next thing in between the phases of the Triumph of the Death. But in terms of other metal miniatures and skeletons, haven't gotten that far yet, but I'm still worming out ideas.
Do you have any designs for ever bringing manufacturing in house, or you just like it the way it is?
So I do all my laser cutting in house, right? And I think I'm just going to keep that as is, and I'll let I'll do some resin casting, but that takes up a certain amount of space. Although I've been talking to Kawe about that. I'm trying to talk him into doing the resin casting and taking over that for me. but no, the metal casting, I'm going to, I have done it. I know how to do it. So I know all of the processes and all the things involved, but I'm going to leave that to the professionals.
Yeah. If I'm
doing everything, man, that I don't have time to design.
Yeah. So how did KublaCon go for you?
KublaCon was great. I ran two games at KublaCon with my wooden soldiers, with my 54mm Wars of Imaginations figures. I ran a game using the rules, the Pikeman's Lament rules. Which is an Osprey set and a skirmish set. And the scenario basically was very Three Musketeers-y, where the certain Dutch Duke and Duchess kept exchanging letters of amour, and they would always drop them off at this particular waystop inn to be picked up. Unfortunately, this particular Duke and Duchess were not married to each other. And so the Duchess's husband is trying to get the letters, and the other Duke is trying to rescue the letters before the other Duke can get it. So they've hired some armies to go get them, and it turns into a total Three Musketeers type thing. So I had six players playing in it. Each were commanding three to four units, and so their battalion of a little pike and shot kind of guys or cavalry. And it just became this awesome scrum fest.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, lots of duels, lots of you know, wooden figures down. I'll actually be posting some figures or some pictures of it on my blog later on tonight. The second battle on Sunday, I did a Breaking Lances tournament with ended up with 12 players, and that's with my 54mm knights. That game I designed to be I built it so my kids can play it. Right. So the real gist of the whole thing is kind of a rock, paper, scissors kind of system that makes it work. And that was just super fun. I had people there, kids that were like age five up to, you know, 55, 60. I don't know. But it was super fun.
What's next for you guys in terms of going to events? What other stuff do you have on your cards for this year?
Well, let's see. For Skull and Crown, we'll be going to PacificCon Game Convention, which happens in September. Maybe in mid-September, I'm going to the UK, but just kind of as a tourist and taking my family. But I'm hoping to maybe either go to Crystal Palace or Partisan. I'm talking with all my pals over there to try and figure out like which conventions are going on, so I can see it. But that's all I have in the near future. Maybe looking to go towards Historicon next year, mm-hmm. or Salute. It's hard to, as you know, to just get over to Salute, but it's also hard to actually like run games at Salute because they book them the day after Salute or just the logistics of moving all that stuff over there. Right. Especially from the West Coast all the way to the UK.
Right.
I was talking with the Zombie Smith guys and we were like, you know, wistfully thinking of how can we actually set up a booth at Salute?
Yeah, because it seems like I've never been, but it looks like a fantastic time.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. It's like the E3 of all the game stuff, right? It's pretty superb.
Maybe you have to. I don't know if you thought about any of the big conventions we've got here. Like, I mean, do you Gen Con or Origins or Adepticon? Do you do any of those?
I really wanted to go to Adepticon this year, but my work, my day job. I'm actually a lead game designer for Neverwinter at Cryptic Studios. That's my day job. So that kept me from going to Adepticon this year. But yeah, I'd love, love, love to go. As a matter of fact, as my post-convention treat, I actually have an old Adeptus Titanicus Titan, the old plastic ones from like the late 80s, on my painting table right now. That's my treat thing that I get to paint. So I was actually talking to Jean-Luc of Gale Force 9, and we were trying to get together to do like an old Adeptus Titanicus game at Adepticon, maybe next year.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And the Historicon I really want to go out to, and Cold Wars I'd like to do as well.
Yeah, especially I think your Wood Wars game would obviously love it, right, at Historicon. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a lot. I've seen at NashCon, which is our local HMGS convention, we had something similar. I think it was called All the King's Men, but
All the King's Men were carrying my stuff at the time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, yeah. So I've played that. It's a great game. It sounds like a little bit different than your rule set, I think, maybe.
I think he was using my figures with his rules, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think they were bouncing the ball. It's been a while.
I think he had a ping pong table or something set up as a demo, so he wasn't playing necessarily on the floor because he was keeping it close to his booth. But yeah.
Well, fantastic, Thomas. Anything we didn't touch on?
Oh, I don't know, Robert. What do you like to play? What are you excited about right now? Yeah,
I'm pretty much Kings of War 100% of the time, and you know, obviously, you touched on some of the stuff that Westphalia Miniatures is doing. Obviously, the stuff you're doing. It's a good time to be a miniature gamer because there is no problem of finding hundreds of things to attract me, right? In fact, the hard part is to resist all the temptation. There's no resistance. Yeah, there isn't. It's futile, right? I mean, it's
another thing I love about Kings of War, Robert, is that you can build whatever you want and make it fun, right? It is back to that old hammer feeling. You're like, what are those guys? Oh, that's my Snotling Pump Wagon Brigade. Cool. What'd you make them out of? You know, deodorant bottles.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah. I saw at the Kings of War tournament, one young lady was running an army and she had hordes of trees. They were just like terrain trees. But when you looked underneath it, there were little nymphs and stuff underneath them, kind of like controlling the trees. She had a troop of geese that were like squawking, and they were just so wonderfully done, right? And then she had some bigger swans, and she had taken and converted them with like wizardesses on the back and all of the Games Workshop griffin armor from like the plastic kit and armored them up. It was so cool, you know. I love that. Again, why I'm enamored so much with the Kings of War, and then being able to design my own troops, and you know, like I said, you can use them as undead, you can use them as humans. It's just a lot of fun.
Well, I think that's a great way to send us out, Thomas. Thanks for coming on and chatting to us.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
That's gonna do us tonight. Until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by posting on our episode thread on the discussion forum found on manticgames.com. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.